This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann and I'm joined by Mawira Karatai, who's in Whakatane. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We are coming up for air again. How exciting.
We are. And oh my gosh, I'm just loving listening to all of these podcasts and excited to see what comes. I think we're over halfway through now, over halfway through cohort one. And today it is my great pleasure to introduce Mr. Greg Masters. Welcome, Greg. Thanks for joining us.
Kia ora, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Kia ora, Greg. Where are you, Greg?
I'm based down here at Waihopai in Invercargill. So it's actually a lovely sunny day right now.
That seems hard to believe.
It does after the last few weeks, but we have sun finally. It brings a smile to my face.
So where did you grow up, Greg?
I actually grew up in a little township called Kaitaia, right at the top of North Island, and moved, studied in Dunedin a number of years ago, and then moved to the TY smelter 17 years ago. This is my first job there, and apart from a small stint in Australia, been here ever since. So obviously loving it down here.
And running away from home as far as you can get within the same country.
Yeah, over the years I've had that question a number of times, why the move? And I think for me it was an opportunity to see a different part of the country, and it's an amazing place. New Zealand is an amazing place, but down here there's so many opportunities to really make a difference, and so haven't wanted to move back really. And actually my parents are coming this coming week, so that'll be a nice time for my kids as well. So
what did you want to be when you grew up?
I actually wanted to be a astronaut, believe it or not. And I really enjoyed science and really enjoyed how things work and really enjoyed the connection that we have to the physical world. And so I'm not an astronaut, obviously, but I think we all have dreams, and I think we can still really realize those dreams with the work that we do every single day. So so really happy with what I'm doing, and really happy with my life, really.
So having decided that you didn't have the right stuff to be an astronaut, what did you do instead?
I studied physics for 4 years at Otago Uni. I then have done various business papers, if you like, and then realised I wanted to make a meaningful change in this world. And whilst I think you can do that without postgraduate study, I've always wanted to learn. I really like gaining knowledge, and so that's where it's led me to be in this Masters in Sustainable Business, because yeah, businesses have a really important play, and that's where I see myself. I see that all businesses can make an impact, and inserting, because people ask, why continue in your current job? Why not try and look for a sustainable role somewhere else? And I think that we have, everyone has a part to play in a business. And so that's why I've continued and why I'm still there. And so, yeah, I don't necessarily use my physics skills now. To some extent I do, but really it's more around how can I make this world a better place. So.
I'm a geographer and a botanist, and I think I use my geography skills all the time. Don't very often, in fact never, get to draw maps, but that's not what it's about. And it used to frustrate me when computing people said, oh, I haven't really used my BIT for a few years. What are you doing? Oh, I'm managing an IT team. Well, that sounds an awful lot like you're using your IT degree. Is it specific skills about physics, or is it transferable?
I think so. I mean, for me, it's the process of learning. So I wanted to know how everything worked, and quickly realized that no matter how much you learn, you quickly learn how much you don't know. But you rely on people, and you rely on the knowledge of people being passed through, and the collective. Each person has a unique role, whether it's physics or whether it's business or whatever it is, to help, you know, collectively learn together. And so, you know, for me, it's physics was just a way to learn more about what I see and what I see and hear around the world, and wanted to know more about it. And now it's, given that I don't really use it, and it's still transferable, that the skills, it's more about the process of learning and communicating and connecting with people. So for me, it was just an entry into how we can make a difference.
So people are saying that maybe you should go and get a proper sustainability job, and your response is that every job is a sustainability job. At least that would be my response. Is that working for you?
It's going to take time. And so for me, it's the narrative is starting to change. And throughout the last probably 18 months, the light bulb has turned on, so to speak, and listening to people, listening to what the good news stories out there in the community, from the, you know, recent work on Aim to Flourish, from the interviews that I've done, just even the conversation at work. I think once we start talking to each other and sharing, and I'm probably, sometimes I go into the world is the bad and look at the state of it. And there is that element, but I think the narrative needs to change to actually look how, where the world can be, look how good it is, look how, if you start looking and there's lots and lots of good things happening both at work and in New Zealand, and it's just about connecting people and sharing those good news. So I think we've started to have those conversations at work. Yep. And I'm really, really wanting to continue those and raise the profile of waste, really. That's my passion, so, and reducing it.
The world clearly needs large-scale resources, aluminium as a case in point. Mm. And I'm thinking that there's two sides of a coin here. One of them is we need it, so whatever the impacts, it doesn't matter, we need it. And then the other side is it's sort of comes under that social license. Unless we're doing it properly and the best we possibly can, then we shouldn't be doing it. Is that the kind of framework that you operate under?
Yeah, I think without a doubt that the narrative, the important narrative is that New Zealand has, and I'll get to my point here. I'm just trying to get the sort of the flow. In New Zealand, we have a wonderful, unique position to create low carbon aluminium. Aluminium is needed. In the quantity it has, that's more of a philosophical question. But it's needed. And I think the conversation is now happening around, well, how can we have aluminium, not necessarily as, okay, we need to produce it at all costs, and which in our case, it's stockpiled a whole bunch of waste over a number of years, and that has completely changed to now actually aluminium almost being as a essentially a byproduct, and it's how we collectively go, well, look, how can we be essentially a big battery for New Zealand? How can we work with our work with the Ngāi Tahus of the world to actually, this is our place, this is what we do, this is how we're making an impact within the region to the people. And, oh, by the way, we're also producing, as a result of that, some aluminium that's helping people to helping this world a better place. So I think that answers the question around, or I think that the narrative's changing. It's certainly not there in terms of, you know, aluminium at all cost. And I think businesses in New Zealand, that's starting to happen. There's a lot, as I say, is a long way to go to actually how you are operating within the community that you're in, and what is the inputs into that, and what are the outputs. And I think the production side of things, and aluminium in this case, but other commodities or other things, it should be, that should take care of itself, and shouldn't be part of the conversation. As a driver to produce, it should be, well, how can we work together in this community? So it's more about the social license, I think.
Let's take your music track. Let's have Imagine Dragons, Believer. It's got something about a unicorn in there. Why this one?
I have a few different reasons for this one. For me, first and foremost, it's really a thank you to my kids. It's their favorite song at the moment. In fact, my eldest is learning it on the piano. So, and I've invested a lot of time into the last 18 months, and there's always they see some of the rewards that is happening, and those conversations that are happening with the kids. So it's really a thank you for putting up with me for the last 18 months around around some tired father, I guess, in some cases. And I think it's also, when you read and listen to it, it's, yes, things in this world are hard. Everyone's got some pain in their lives, but also we are resilient, and we're going to be resilient. And in particular, the food waste and how to be more resilient locally in food. It's, if we think of that from a metaphorical perspective, using this song, it's, we have had hard times, but we can get through it together. We will get through it together. So, personally, and also,
first things first, I'ma say all the words inside my head. I'm fired up and tired of the way that things have been. Oh, ooh, the way that things have been. Oh, ooh. Second thing, second, don't you tell me what you think that I can be. I'm the one at the sail, I'm the master of my sea. Oh, ooh, the master of my sea. Oh, I was broken from a young age, taking my soak into the masses, writing my poems for the few that look at me, took at me, shook at me, feeling me, singing from heartache, from the pain, taking my message from the veins, speaking my lesson from the brain, seeing the beauty through the...
Hey, you burn me up, believer, believer. love, oh, ooh, your spirit up above, oh, ooh. I was choking in the crowd, building my rain up in the cloud, falling like ashes to the ground, hoping my feelings, they would drown, but they never did, ever lived, ebbing and flowing, inhibited, limited, till it broke open and rained down, it rained down like... flames, you're the face of the future, the blood in my veins, oh, ooh, the blood in my veins, oh, ooh, but they never did, ever lived, ebbing and flowing, inhibited, limited, till it broke up when it rained down like...
Bubble Sprite of the Forest of Orokanui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa, nau mai haere mai, ki te ao marama, nau mai haere mai, ki te whatakura o te hine tītama. Nō reira, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā tātou katoa. Here we are, beautiful people being alive. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, well, really it is. And even in those moments, when we feel it's not, on another glitter. And you know, I'm speaking to you for only 3 minutes today, which is very exciting. So really, the main gist and thrust of what I'm attempting to get through to you is how precious you are, how perfect you are, how wonderful you are, how I'm so grateful you're here. I'm just one spark of consciousness in this myriad of infinite consciousness. And so are you, and how great we can be here together and express ourselves and live our lives with all the ups and downs and the pain and the terrible uncertainty and difficulty, all these things. And the wonderful love, the wonderful kindness, the wonderful excitement, the balm to our souls, which is the living world, all these things. Well, for me, the living world. And the balm to our souls, that is our creative energy, which I firmly believe we all possess. The wonder that is music. It gives us another language all the time. Another way to understand. Of course, body language and our emotionality. Our emotional body. That moves within us all these things. What gifts they are. How fortunate we are. And of course, when we feel that it's too much and we can't go on. As I know sometimes we do. There will be moments that redeem the world to us, that reassure us that we're in the right place, that we're on the right track, which we all are, wherever we are and whoever we are, and whatever's happening around us, we're in the right place, we're on the right track, and everything that we have to share is so precious, and so important, and so perfect, and so needed. So of course, thank you to Sam and the whole Blown Bubbles team for having me, and I'll see you next time. Ka kite! Ngā mihi aroha nui ki a koutou.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Greg Masters.
Greg, we're going to listen to your podcast now. But before we do, what would you like to tell our listeners about it?
I think for me, it's that I want people, when they're listening to it, to have the lens of, is food, it's not... It's important in people's lives, and to reduce waste, be more locally resilient, we need to connect back with people in the land. We need to actually locally come together instead of going to a food chain supermarket and just buying something off a shelf. Actually think about connecting, using food to connect back with people and the community. That's kind of the lens that I want people to take in, because I think that is a really the most powerful thing we can do as a people listening to this, is actually connect back back to people, and then and the food waste will take care of itself, because we're buying local and we're really genuinely connecting to the food that we eat through people.
Beautiful. Food waste if you buy local. You're going to support the environment by not having all of those food miles that are associated with it.
It's a place where both consumers and producers actually know that if they go there, they're getting local.
Welcome to Coming Up for Air, Temporary Issues in Sustainability. Kia ora, I'm Greg Masters, your host for this episode, and today we're diving into a topic that is close to my heart, local food security and resilience, and how we can tackle food waste to build a better future. The 2024 Food Waste Index paints a sobering picture. In 2022, the world wasted over 1 billion tonnes of food, with 19 food available to being wasted at the retail, food service and household levels. This is in addition to loss in the supply chain, highlighting significant environmental, social and economic consequences. Food waste is a major contributor to global greenhouse gas emissions, accounting for 8 to 10, which is nearly 5 times the amount from the aviation sector. As we waste food, 183 million will remain hungry, and a third of humanity faces food. Today's world, with rising costs and recent disruption in supply chains, ensuring everyone has access to nutritious, sustainable food is more challenging than ever. Food brings people together, strengthens our community, and protects our planet. When we waste food, it's a reminder of how distant we have become from each other and from the environment. It's time for us to come up for air, take action, and rethink how we approach food, working food systems resilient and secure, one that embraces local food and preserves our planet resources. Today we'll explore what research suggests about how businesses can enhance our food system security and resilience through preventing and reducing food waste. I then have the pleasure of talking to wonderful people from different parts of the world about how food waste security and resilience impact them, the work they do, and what they see as the important thing to change. We'll now take a look at the business implications from literature and use a recent review by Sadra et al. 2022 reporting articles to identify those actions for business to reduce food waste and improve our local food security and resilience. 1. Culture-informed food waste prevention reduction. Understanding cultural is vital for waste reduction and prevention. Businesses must recognize of engaging with diverse cultural backgrounds to help with their food waste reduction programs and operations. By incorporating cultural values into their practice, such as respect for food as a valuable resource, businesses enhance engagement, anticipation, and strengthen the people, culture, and food. This not only contributes to reducing food waste, but also security and within local communities, such as here in the Murihiku. Businesses collaborate and partner with Māori to develop sustainable business practices that align their cultural values and promote responsible use of resources. By acknowledging and embracing societal culture within, business can contribute to building. 2. Responsibility and transparency. Business must prioritize food waste transparency responsibility throughout the operation, setting clear food waste reduction prevention targets, implementing sustainable packaging, providing clear information about product shelf life, storage recommendations, and enhancing date labeling packaging practices are identified as effective measures can take. These actions contribute to waste that promotes transparency and builds trust with stakeholders. 3. Sustainable production practices. Integrating sustainability to agricultural manufacturing processes, such as regenerative farming techniques and repurposed byproducts to value-added products, provides actionable steps. These practices optimize resources, minimize effects throughout the supply chain, and ultimately food waste generation. Additionally, adopting methods that improve soil health, conserve water, and reduce reliance on synthetic inputs contribute to food resilience and further reducing. 4. Empowering our community for collective resilience. Empowering our community is fundamental in our fight against food, and we need involvement across all regions. It's about bringing food back to the community, literally, creating connections with friends, neighbours, and making real change together. For business, this means actively engaging by setting up regional and local food hubs and partnering with a wide range of organisations. Food finds its way to those in need, connecting people with people and people with food. By establishing food hubs and collaborating closely with local partners, business will strengthen relationships and a greater appreciation for the food we share and a collective food reserve by preventing. 5. Data-driven approaches, technological changes. Business use actionable data-driven approaches to improve our foods. Collecting data on the impacts, using data analytics, business can target key areas of improvement. This involves, for example, analyzing supply chain data to manage and optimize inventory and minimize food waste. Implementing advanced technologies like smart packaging, AI, and real-time data analytics enables business to monitor food suitability for waste effectively, contribute to greater resilience against environmental challenges. And finally, policy advocates sustainable foods. Businesses have a significant role to play in advocating for policy and regulatory changes that address critical issues such as food waste security and resilience. Leveraging their resources and their influence, business must collaborate with policymakers to implement measures that put into practice food waste and contribute to equitable, sustainable food. This collaboration involves policies that prioritize social support programs and tailor employment opportunities for vulnerable groups, fostering an economic stability and access to essential. Business can reinforce government, intensify monitoring, food processing, and advocate initiatives such as tax incentives and grants for infrastructure, equipment, innovative food waste. Addressing food waste in New Zealand needs this comprehensive approach, and by taking concrete action, business will reduce food waste and contribute to creating a resilient and secure food system. First, we'll speak with Deborah, a leader of a nationwide organization redistributing surplus food at scale to vulnerable, reducing waste and improving food security.
About 4 or 5 years ago, I recognised that there was a need for a larger organisation that sits above food rescues and food banks. And that organisation needed to collect, aggregate and distribute very large volume surplus because food rescues simply couldn't get 300 pounds. And that was what was being offered. Once big organisations knew that food rescues were out there and could take their surplus food and put it back into to feed people, suddenly food waste became visible. So we collect food from the growing end all the way through transportation. If something has happened transport-wise, creating an issue where this food can be sold, then warehousing, manufacturing, retailing. We don't collect food from the consumer unless it comes from their gleaning, a gleaning initiative or from their vegetable garden. So we don't take food from people's cupboards. We encourage them to share with their community themselves on that level. We're on a much larger level. So that's where the food comes from. And then it gets distributed out to social service community agencies that provide food support and wraparound services to people in need in the local communities that we operate in. And I think the important thing to remember here is the wraparound service. Because if we're just handing out food to people in a community situation, we're not actually addressing the drivers of food poverty or security.
How do we become more resilient in our food system in New Zealand?
I think from my point of view is that we need to support local businesses. And the important part of supporting local is that people go, oh, well, it will be so much more expensive. But as long as local get the same price as what they would get if they sold it to the supermarket or a national chain, then they're breaking even anyway. So it's I think we need to start prioritizing our own local food businesses, and that's education too. That's about teaching people that one, for the economy, it's good for your local economy to support local, but it's also good for food waste as well. You're going to reduce food waste if you buy local. You're going to support the environment by not having all of those food miles that are associated with it. Just eat in season and eat local and support local, I think. So there's that. But I also think that we really got to get more into policy interventions at national and at international levels. We've been trying for a very long time. As you know, I probably know, I'm also on the New Zealand Food Waste Champions board and working party. And we've been trying for a very long time to educate people about food waste. Love food, hate waste, do it at a consumer level, and they do it pretty well, but it's the same story over and over again. And everybody knows, have a shopping list and first in your fridge, first out sort of thing. We all know that, but it just doesn't change anything. I think we need to focus more on regulations to encourage consumers and producers and retailers to reduce food waste throughout the whole supply chain. I think we need to start getting a bit more heavy-handed in this. And that would be, say, tax incentives for businesses so that they could donate their surplus food and receive a tax incentive for that, a tax break for that. And there is something coming in or having just come in from the IRD around that. They introduced it during COVID and under an emergency donation definition. And I think they're just going to take away that emergency and just make it, if you make a donation, you can get some relief out of that. So that is a good thing. I think we need to standardize our date labeling. That's a huge problem for people. This whole idea, use by, I get, you know what use by is. Yeah. Everybody knows, use it by that date or throw it away. That's about safety. But best before is about quality, and people confuse those dates. So, you know, I think we could standardize that sort of labeling. And then I also would like to see some subsidies for innovation in this area to encourage technologies that facilitate food waste reduction and recycling. That is the national thing I see. You know, we need more regulation to incentivize people. And then from an international point of view, I think we need to be looking at sort of international cooperations and best practices. So by way of an example, you've got the UN SDG target of 12.3. That's an easy one. Reduce food loss and waste by 2030 by practices, a sort of a data bank of best practices that everybody could put their what current initiatives that they're working on, like the AI that you were just talking about. So I think internationally there's a lot of work that could be done. And then, of course, as I just said before, nationally here, locally.
Great to talk to some like-minded people that's really keen on reducing food waste. So thanks very much. Good.
And now, from a local perspective, I have pleasure of talking to Annette Trent, Chair of the Southern Farmers Market and owner of Young Veggies, in the recently Murihiku Food Roadmap, Feeding Murihiku.
Tell me about yourself and what you do and how you've been affected by food security and here.
Yeah, so we're growers here and more seasonal growers here in Murihiku. So my husband and I grow indoors in tunnel houses and hydroponically. So this is a little bit of a challenge, and had a couple of reasons, but hopefully. A lot to do with climate change, actually. So it's sort of the infrastructure that we're now having in place. So in terms of waste, that's the wastage that we've had, really. We've had wasted time and opportunity, and also we lost the crops just this past season due to climate change. Insofar as those specifically kind of going right back to those big winds that we had last November, but very, very hot days. And so in tunnel houses, it's not safe to open up all our, you know, airways. I don't know where you've grown in tunnel houses, but
I do at the moment.
Yeah. And so the temperature inside, we need to be putting better infrastructure to try and keep those temperatures down where we can't open up when those high winds come about, which still have the very high temperatures outside. So that stressed the plants, and then the bugs, we just stopped the bugs at the plant stage. So, so it just became unsustainable. Yeah, so this was the last thing. So that's certainly a waste. Generally, so what we're doing, if I move into the Murihiku Kai Collective, actually, to try and combat some of the, allow the growers to grow in safe in the knowledge that they won't have east waste. So see, we're trying to build up the customer base alongside growing the growers, and so that we don't have that waste as somewhere for it to go. Great, we've got Kiwi Harvest, so with the Murihiku Kai Collective, we've got all those contacts now. And also finding extra outlets during the week, because farmers market is only once a week. So it's finding those extra markets or marketplaces, and retaining that sort of direct to consumer model, really. So so waste for us, we haven't, apart from the fact that we lost those crops, we don't have a lot of waste because we try to grow to the market, and with the strawberries that we grow, we've got far more demand than we supply, so any waste there. Yeah, so we haven't, waste is not really a big issue for us actually at this stage.
In your mind, how do we become more secure in our
in their local
food,
resilience.
Food system and being more resilient.
So we have to, and this is it's all in the Good Food Roadmap, actually, all those strategies that can come through with the questions that are posed, but we have to have the infrastructure, we have to have the conversations, we have to change the conversations for people to be going, to be wanting to buy direct from the consumer. There's a regulation kind of aspect to that as well that needs to be addressed, but we have to, our whole conversation has become very, so I had an interview about a month or so ago with another master's student, and she sort of actually said something that's kind of stuck with me, and she said, it's interesting to hear small growers now talk of being the alternative supply when traditionally the small growers were the supply. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so that whole conversation about us being alternative, the farmers market being an alternative to what? So it's alternative to the supermarket, but the supermarkets are relatively new in the marketplace, as far as supplying food for us, aren't they? But they've actually taken and captured and centralised so many things and so many processes. The regional food resilience is like, I think, I don't know where the information came from, and you'll probably be able to kind of track this down or know this, but I think we have about 3 days with food supply in Southland if we're cut off. And we honestly don't have the growers. The farmers market, you think, an excess of fresh produce and primary produce, really struggling. We've had to put a lot of work and a lot of focus into trying to support our local growers in that. And so we've kind of put this in place so that people who have large gardens, who have excess, you know, that sort of thing, can participate, you know, and have a whole kind of vendor kind of situation, which a lot of them don't want to be, you know, they don't want to send their Sunday at the farmer's market every, you know, all the time, that sort of thing. So it's putting those systems in play. I see one of your questions was, what do you think one thing would be right now? One thing for me is a food hub. A food hub where I think the farmer's market is a food hub, but I think our capacity and our capabilities, I guess, into the day are, definitely capacity is limiting us. We're pretty much run on volunteer, you know, input. It's the umbrella organisation is, you know, not for profit. But if we had a place, there's a very, very, I'm quite envious actually, very good model that's running, or at least it looks to be running over in Melbourne. It's a food hub where the farmers market has a place set up every week, but there's also a kitchen there so that any wastage will go into the kitchen and go as added value product. There are gardens there for putting into the kitchen, but also for teaching people how to grow their own. And there's another big warehouse type building, I think, that can be used by people to sell their produce during the week. You know, like it's set up as a cooperative. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what that works, but it's a place where both consumers and producers actually know that if they go there, they're getting local. There's also a lot of work to do, I think, around the education. I think Southland people believe that we grow our own food. It's an amazing region for growing food. But the majority of it is imported out. It's not grown to be used locally. It's grown for export markets. So it's even about changing that conversation around at least having a portion available for the local market.
If you could change one thing right now that would make the most significant positive difference for the future, what would that be?
So I'm going to slightly swap that, because I think probably that CHI coordinator is the pivotal person. And whether it becomes more than one person, I can see that being a huge job. As it evolves, really. So that would be those connections and identifying the issues that are happening out there. It will be slightly different on what area you're in, like what you're producing. And I think initially we will try the Mirahiki Kaikoura, we're trying to support those smaller hubs in doing what they do. So Kiwi Harvest are already, you know, considered a food hub because of what they do. They're using that food and moving it on. Farmers Market are already a food hub because of what we do with the growers and the direct-to-consumer model, you know, those sorts of things. So how can we extend? It might be offering or providing another place, but then Yeah. So it's looking at, it might even be, and we talked about this yesterday, it might even be about looking at a business model and trying to kind of get that path ready. If somebody wants to sell, we'll go back to the meat one, sell meat direct to consumer in Southland, what are the steps that they need to do? You know, put that pathway in place so that there's not all those barriers. Because it's very daunting. Like, it's very daunting for somebody as a small producer to try and everything's sort of set up for the larger business anyway. And I think really what's happened here in Southland is that collaboration. So there's definitely a collaboration of the people within the food space down here. There's a willingness, there's a want. We can see the need, and there are action people in the group, which is always good too, isn't it?
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Coming Up for Air, Contemporary Issues in Sustainability. Today we've taken a dive into the critical topic of local food security, exploring this complex challenge of food waste and its wide-ranging impacts. And as we've talked with leaders like Deborah and Annette, they have reminded us that there are simple solutions to food waste security and resilience. It's all about reconnecting with food, reconnecting with people, supporting local economies so that access to nutritious options are available for all. Every action that we take counts. And so join us next time as we continue to take action to build a better world, a more sustainable future.
Greg, that was an incredibly powerful interview, and for me, it aligned perfectly with the way I live anyway, and it made me think of old values, my grandparents and my parents who grew everything, who sowed everything. I've got memories of my mother going to the farmer and getting a bag of wool and spinning it and knitting things for us. Like, there's all these things that we used to do that somehow our generation has lost connection with the world around us. And I worry that it's because we're all working so hard to pay the bills and pay the mortgage and have the car and the big TV and all the rest of the stuff that doesn't matter. And we've lost touch with the things that do matter. How do we get back there?
because this has been quite a really personal journey for me doing this podcast. It's been incredibly hard. I've really enjoyed it. And one of the things when I've reflected on it all is I remember this is going back, would be 35 years ago, at my grandmother's place out at near 90 Mile Beach, and it was after one particular meal, and there was only a small bowl of peas left after our Sunday lunch, and she put it into a little container and then put it in the fridge at that stage and kind of, you know, that's only a small amount. Why would you? No one's going to eat it the next day. But for me, that was a reflection on that historically we've treasured and valued food, and it seems like we've lost that connection. And well, we have lost that connection. It doesn't seem like it. We have, and so I think it's actually getting back to getting to a more of a community where people are sharing stories, where people are showcasing the food that they're producing, teaching people, and my kids are an example of that. Actually, where does your food come from? How do you cook it? We don't waste food here. We're always thinking about the next, even dare I say it, our orange peels. We're actually utilizing those in the next. It's about utilizing the whole produce and getting the produce, ideally from my back garden, which we do have, but getting it from as locally as you can. What is one thing that you can change today? And so it's the small things that, because people think, well, look, I can't influence what happens around the world and but actually it's the small things every single day that make a difference. So sharing stories and the small things make a difference.
It's so easy, isn't it, to just go and plant some seeds and food grows. And it is one of the easiest things in the world to do. And yet for some people, it is a mountain they can't climb. It's too hard, too difficult, too much responsibility to manage. I don't know what that is. What's the barrier to the easier, to me, what seems the easiest thing in the world?
I think to your point, we've lost that. We've got into the busyness of everything and trying to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, and trying to buy our way to happiness where through material things and that don't make a difference at the end of the day. And so I think there's a perception of time because we're doing all this other stuff that actually really doesn't add a whole lot of worldly value. And so for me, it's actually making the time to connect back to people is probably I think we've lost that connection to people because we're too busy with other stuff.
Where to from here with this thinking with you, Greg? Because I see this as a pathway you're on. Where to from here with that?
I'm actually going to reach out. I have reached out, but sort of follow up. I'm for me the Murahiku Good Food Roadmap that I've mentioned, for me that is just a fabulous way. And some of the questions that are posed in there, you know, everyone in here should be asking those questions, but I'm going to be getting myself involved in that somehow. And then how can I make a difference at TY with regard to food waste? So that's my two things.
Oh, I really like that. And I mean, that you said just before, that you pick one or two things you can change and you do that, and that's exactly what you're going to do. And I love that when a commitment turns into a real thing in your life, and then your children see you do that, so that becomes their natural way, and then they pick one or two things and it snowballs from there.
Well, that's right. I mean, if we don't do it with our kids, then the cycle continues, and so we have to change the narrative and actually showcase the beautiful thing we have in food and people and connect the two together again.
Hear, hear.
I have some questions to end the show. Greg, what is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Ooh, great question. I have two things. One is I went on a Milford track walk with my wife, and that was the first ever multi-day hike we've ever done together. And we've been married for 15 years. And so we've come out of that even stronger together. So that's the one first and foremost. I think secondly, and it might sound cliche, but I generally, the hardest thing I've done in the last 18 months has actually been this podcast, but I think it's been the most rewarding. So that's, for me, it's been a great success. So the two things.
What's your superpower?
What is my superpower? I think it is having the ability to read people.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
No, probably not. but in terms of reading people, I think I'm relatively easy to read in terms of my expressions and things, and I think it's I can see the emotional things that people go through. So it's everyone has a face, and you have to explore that to get to know people. So yeah, that's my superpower.
Do you have a go-to definition of sustainability?
My definition has actually come. I've sort of started to really think about this recently, and it's just creating a better world together. To do that you have to be we have to be more sustainable. So yeah, that's my definition, is creating a bit better world together.
What challenge or opportunity are you looking forward to in the next year or so?
My thesis. That's going to be that's going to be the next exciting thing.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Take the time to get to know people. Take the time to use food to help create this small steps in people's lives, and that will genuinely and honestly lead to changes in everyone's life around everything sustainable. So, and once you start doing that, you just can't go back. So, and we shouldn't go back, because we won't have a world if we do.
Thank you for that. Mawira.
Greg, I just want to say thank you very much for your contribution to our shared learning space, for everything that you've brought to the classroom, for your scientist mind, which is incredibly important in any learning space, because it's a whole different lens and a whole different way of perceiving things that not everybody has. It's a gift in itself, really. But then at the absolute other end of the continuum of life is this passionate, incredibly deep thinking, community minded, family loving human being. And it has just been joyful to spend time with you and to experience you, along that whole line. Thank you very much for your sharing in the class. Just for that deep wisdom that you have brought to our space. And I wish you all the best, and I cannot wait to see where your food journey takes you, because that is really exciting. Thanks for joining us today. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you very much.
Now, we were going to go out to Bare Naked Ladies. But then I thought, no, let's talk about food instead. So, you've got five choices you get to choose. Do you want to go out to American Pie?
I started singing bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
Sugar.
Sugar. Oh, honey, honey.
They Might Be Giants. Oh, that's the dinner bell.
Waiting for the dinner bell to do the bell thing. Dinner bell ring.
Ribs from Lord. Or Weird Al with Eat It.
Just eat it, eat it.
Lord, please.
Done.
Thank you.
scary, you're getting old. We can talk it so good, we can make it so divine. We can talk it good, how you wish it would be all the time. This dream isn't feeling sweet, but reeling through the midnight streets. And I've never felt more alone, feels so scary getting old. This dream isn't feeling sweet, but reeling through the midnight streets. And I've never felt more alone, feels so scary getting old.
You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles. Positive conversations with people in their bubbles are their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We're broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. We've been talking with Greg Masters, who provided today's contribution for Coming Up For Air. With Wirraka Time, I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Mate wa.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.